Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Breaking Western Podcast. We are in season 4. Oh, that was really nice. We nailed it. Season 4, going for broke, what it means to be a mindful consumer, where you're putting your dollar bills, y'all. Abby, who are we talking to today?
Well, we have someone who makes some of the coolest Western wear in the biz, in my humble opinion. We have Sari Gessner from Jukebox Mama.
Jukebox Mama.
I think the theme of today's episode is like
singing.
which makes sense.
I love it.
Well, Sari, I feel like you do a lot of really amazing garments for singers and performers, but you also make just rad wear for, you know, anyone who comes your way, and really some of the coolest custom stuff I've seen in a minute. So I'm super stoked to be talking to her. Selfishly.
Awesome.
I feel like
I'm glad to be talking to you too as well.
Oh, thank you. Well, how are you today? How is it in Nashville?
It's good. It's a little bit rainy, but, you know, can't complain.
A nice crisp fall day.
I love that. I think it's the Midwesterner in all of us that wants to talk about the weather first things first. Like, hey, when's the last time y'all got rain?
What's it like where you are right now?
And Sari, we were just talking before we pressed the scary record button that you're from, what is it, Rockford, Illinois?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
Which, I'm not going to lie, every time, even though I grew up not far from Rockford, every time I think about Rockford, I think about the Rockford Peaches, like the baseball or softball team.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, I'm glad you're relieved.
Yeah, no, I definitely think of the Rockford Peaches, like, from A League of Their Own, but they're definitely a real team as well, which is cool. And then Cheap Trick, the band, is from Rockford as well. Those are two claim to fame.
Whoa.
The more you know.
Well, and then, of course, Jukebox Mama, which, if it's not already on a sign, it will be.
You know, this is a quick aside, but a fun fact I learned about the Quad Cities just today is that Doc Holliday's common law wife migrated to Davenport from Hungary.
This is not a real story.
So wow.
They call her like Big Nose Kate. This is real. She was orphaned here in Davenport, ran away. She just like hopped on a train, went down to St. Louis where she met him, and then they like ran off somewhere, and she was sighted, maybe, I think in St. Louis. She became a prostitute there, and that's how they
met. Good for her.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then she was there at the shootout at the OK Corral and everything. So,
wow.
The more you know.
Well, speaking of Doc Holliday and Western wear, can we start this interview now?
You're welcome.
All right, Sari, back to you. Let's start this off with, like, what you do and how did you get started in doing that?
Yeah, so I'm the designer and maker behind Jukebox Mama. It's kind of a one-woman show. I do everything that needs to be done around here. And I make custom Western wear using traditional tailoring techniques that bring together the style and construction of classic Western wear with a bit of a modern twist.
Oh, my God. What an elevator pitch. That was amazing.
Perfect.
That was so concise. Whoa.
You've done this before.
No kidding. So how did you want to get started in that, or how do you even learn something that obviously is way older than you are? Did you have, like, a person that got you inspired into this, or how did this start?
Somewhat. I guess it's kind of a long story because I've been sewing for most of my life. My grandma taught me when I was really young, and then just kind of experimented with it in high school, sewed my own clothes, and then I studied costume design in college. And then since then, I've just been working as a seamstress in various settings. But then when I moved to Austin, Texas several years ago, I fell in love with going dancing at honky-tonks and Western swing music and just the whole vibe of everything there. And I started getting into the, like, 1940s and 1950s Western wear fashions especially. And I started doing hand embroidery, but then once I found out about chain stitch machines, it all just kind of came together. And yeah, I got my chain stitch machine in about April of 2018. And after a lot of setup and practice and troubleshooting the machine and everything, then I made my first embroidered Western shirt in May of 2018. So it's weird to think about it. It hasn't actually been that long ago.
Wow. So once you started, you really just hit the ground running.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, that was with a lot of sewing experience. So I just kind of like plugged all of that into Western wear.
Mm.
Incredible. Was there a moment when you saw somebody like wearing a specific Western garment, or like when you were out at the honky tonks that you thought, yes, Western wear, I'm going to start doing this?
Yeah, actually, I think I first started studying like HFRC shirts because you can find them a little bit more easily, you know, when you're like vintage hunting. At least that was my experience in Texas. And I remember going up to a friend who is a swing dancer, and I was in the swing dance scene there as well. And he's wearing a Western shirt, and I was like, is that an HFRC? And I don't think it was, but he was impressed anyways. And then, yeah, that's kind of what it just snowballed from there.
So you were studying the actual garments. Like, you had a physical garment, and we're looking at the construction and make of those.
Yeah, yeah, I'd say so. And then I have some vintage patterns as well. And the first one I made was from a vintage pattern, like from the 50s. So,
very cool.
Yeah, if I have a pattern, I can sew pretty much anything.
I'm so jealous. Also, I love that it was a man first that inspired this, not just like some cute little girl at the honky-tonk. Like, this was a men's shirt. I think that's iconic.
Yeah, yeah. It's fun. I mean, I like to do both men's wear and women's wear, and a lot of times I focus more on the women's wear just because, like, it's kind of fun, and I can, like, try it on as a sample and see how it fits. But, you know, I really can't decide, you know, and so I don't. I just do both, really. But
yeah. I think that's something I've always respected about Western wear, or just, like, the Western clothing history, is that men's wear traditionally has always been just as ornate and flamboyant as women's. Like, there's not a huge differentiation between the two.
Yeah, I love that about it too.
Super cool. So I'm curious too, where does the name Jukebox Mama come from?
I was also wondering that.
I was kind of just like going through songs, and then there's two songs actually called Jukebox Mama. One of them is a Link Ray song. And I really love Link Ray, like surf rock guitar and stuff. But then this is actually from like one of his later albums, once he was getting into like swamp pop, I guess is what you call it. But it's just a cute song. And I just feel like Jukebox Mama kind of, to me, is like kind of like a honky tonk angel in a way, but not exactly. Like, just when you hear your song come on and you just have to be out on the dance floor. And that just really resonates with me. So, that's kind of where his name came from.
We are really sentimental to grandmas around here. Abby got her start sewing through her grandma. I got started in music because of my grandma. So I have to know, did your grandma also swing dance?
Well, one of them did.
Ah,
my grandma who, not the same one who taught me how to sew, but yes, my other grandma did. And she and I would dance around the house a little bit once. Once I learned how, so.
Wow, my heart.
Yeah.
But I'm. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm also very sentimental about grandmas. And in my workspace, I have my two grandmas and one great-grandma, that these great photos of them framed above my workspace, so they kind of just, like, watch over what I do and stuff.
Oh, my God.
I have a picture of my grandma in my workspace as well with, like, a little frame that she painted and made herself after her first communion. So cute.
Oh, that's so cool.
Like,
I love that.
Gold sticks and thread.
That's really cute.
I honestly had no idea she made that. I thought you did as a child. I just learned something new tonight.
No, I didn't.
So you got inspired. You're doing this. You're exploring garments at the club, as you do. When did this start turning into a business?
Well, in 2019, really right at the beginning, my boyfriend and I moved to Nashville for work for both of us. But, at that time, I started apprenticing with Manuel Cuevas, the legendary Western wear designer who worked with Nudy in the past. I know, casual. I kind of buried the lead on that one, but So I apprenticed with him for about 3 months or so, but I was kind of like simultaneously doing my own thing. So it was like kind of part time, but then I just kind of got busy with my own stuff and went from there. But I would say I was doing kind of part-time Jukebox Mama and part-time working with other designers until July of 2020, actually. So it's been a year and a little bit of me just doing full-time Jukebox Mama.
Wow. Okay. I'm not going to lie. Angela and I were just like blankly staring at each other.
We have to go back. We have to rewind a minute.
A moment.
How did you get a internship, apprenticeship with Manuel? Like what?
Well, my friend Maria, she is a Western wear designer as well, of North Country Maiden. And she lives here in Nashville, and I had talked to her about it, and she had done that before, and she suggested that I reach out and do it. And so, so when Nate, my boyfriend, and I visited here, I had an interview, and it went well, and he was like, yeah, sure, let's do it. So, when we moved out here, I just kind of jumped right in with that.
Incredible.
He sounds like a great person to just take on people. Like, I know a lot of people are kind of gun-shy when it comes to apprenticeships or things like that, that you're teaching people, like, what do you want to call that? Like a proprietary blend or something that you can't share. But what was, like, some inspiration that you gained from him or something that you learned?
Well, definitely a lot of the tailoring techniques, because I hadn't done a whole lot of suit jackets at that time, but I've done some, but just like techniques that I wouldn't have known otherwise, and certain things like how to do the pockets on Western shirts, just like I was doing them one way, but then I learned new ways to do that kind of thing.
And was he sweet about it, or was he like, girl, you got it, you did this wrong?
Some of both.
Amazing. That's exactly how I imagined it.
Yeah, he's great. He's such a character. He's awesome. I really enjoyed my time there. You know, even though it's short, it was good.
Well, incredible. So I'm wondering if you can walk us through kind of a handmade garment, like what goes into the creation of that piece?
Yeah, so for me, if it's a custom garment, I start by just kind of discussing with the customer what they're looking for and if they have any inspiration images. You know, that it's not necessary, but it's definitely helpful if they're taking inspiration from the past, or if they have certain flowers that they want to incorporate, or animals or something like that. And then I have them fill out a measurement sheet so I can make sure to get the right fit, and I'll sketch out the design of what I'm going to do. And then I have a lot of patterns that I've made in the past that I'll use, but I kind of adapt them for each person's measurements, and cut out the fabric, do the embroidery, sew it all together, and rhinestoning if it has rhinestones, and all of it's done in-house.
Amazing. Whoa. And I've noticed, too, on a lot of your posts, you say, like, you even go so far as to hand-cut your own fringe, or you're doing these really intricate cuts to make, like, the edging.
I didn't see that. You hand-cut fringe? What?
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, if it's leather fringe, it could be that I could find a supplier that would do it for me. But sometimes it's just like, okay, I can't really find gold, genuine leather fringe out there. Like, I've looked, and it's just not really out there. So I can find gold leather. And if I need it to match other cutouts that I'm doing, you know, if I'm doing those, like, ranch-made style ones, then it all needs to match. And I just don't know if I could find it anywhere. So I just have to do it myself. But
you're
it works.
What? That's amazing.
That's
thank
what
you.
Makes a handmade or a custom garment so special, right? Because you are getting entirely unique pieces all coming together to make something that is so custom that you literally couldn't even buy the component parts somewhere else.
Yeah, definitely. And I do really love the personal aspect of custom garments for each customer, you know, like, that could mean embroidering a wedding suit, which is really special and could incorporate certain people who are important to them, favorite flowers, or just any kind of thing that's personal to them could be incorporated in the suit. Or for performers, it could be for their album cover or to go on tour that goes with the theme of their album. So, yeah, it could be anything. And I love that personal element of it.
So as you're doing the measurements, I am wondering if your vintage patterns, do you find that those measurements are something you have to throw out the window for people of, like, this decade?
Somewhat. I mean, sizing means, like, nothing to me. So it's funny. I'm trying to compile a size chart, but it's, like, I always go by the measurements because sizes, it could just be absolutely anything, you know? It means absolutely nothing, really. So, yeah, I mean, it's different in vintage patterns or modern patterns, but I've actually been working with a pattern maker to get some of my patterns graded to more inclusive sizing because I would love to have, like, really, really good patterns made by someone who knows, like, larger bodies very well. So it's just something that's, like, off my plate that I really want to do more of, you know, just have those patterns really keyed in and perfect for those customers.
Abby's face has lit up. She has stepped up onto her soapbox. She is ready to roll.
Awesome.
In the mirror because I was so excited because I think that's something that people don't always recognize when they're buying clothes. Like, you know, quote unquote, your size at a certain store or through a certain brand, but so much more goes into, like, the fit of a garment than just a number size. Like, it's all down to your measurements. And so much of having a good garment that you love and feel comfortable in is about the way it fits. Because the clothes...
And not the letter on the tag.
I always say, clothes should fit people. People shouldn't fit into their clothes.
Boom.
Definitely. I love that so much.
We should get t-shirts that say that. Wow. Wow.
You heard it here first.
This is our official copyright.
I love it.
So that is something, too, that you get from a custom garment that you don't necessarily find in ready-to-wear, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can do really any combination of sizes. It's not going to be, like, really no two bodies are the same, you know? Even if you're the same size from a store, it'll fit different people completely differently, so...
Yeah,
that sort of tailoring thing. Even in making something to someone's measurements, like, I work with people all across the country and across the world, but it really is nice to be able to have a fitting with them in person because then I can dial in the fit even further because you never know how it's actually going to hang on the body until you try it on.
We had an instance of that. Abby has made me a lot of garments, and I have scoliosis, so my lower spine is, like, crooked. And depending on how long it's been since I've been to my tri-weekly chiropractic appointment, and by that I mean not once every 3 weeks, not three times a week. I probably said that wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But she made me these pants, and they were, like, to my measurements, right? And
I was so confident on the fit.
Like, we almost, I feel like we almost didn't even do a fitting because you're like, well, yeah, I had this, like, we're good to go. And there was so much else going into the pants that it was like, all right, you know, like, on to the next step. So I put these pants on and, like, they were the furthest thing from fitting.
They were so bad.
They were so bad.
Oh, no.
Abby almost cried. She might have cried. And she took them all apart, I don't know, worked her magic, said bibbidi-bobbidi-boo.
I literally had, like, the front half of the pants and the back half, and I made her stand there very still, spread eagle, as I, like, pinned them in the right places.
Yeah.
And we looked at the garment afterwards, and my inseam,
where the two crotch seams line up?
Wasn't, like, a half inch off.
Between a quarter and a half inch. And I was sewing it, and I thought to myself, this cannot be right. But she tried them on, and they fit like a glove.
Wow.
And that's
so interesting.
Yeah. And I've worn normal pants my whole life, so I don't know what that says about me. So season one of the podcast, we talked to all makers, which you certainly fit in that category as well. But most of those people, I would say all of those people, hated custom. It was like the bane of their existence.
I don't do custom.
But then you are like, what percentage would you say you do custom versus ready-to-made garments?
Well, it's really been a lot of customs because, I mean, they keep me busy. Like, people want customs, and then I get them on the books. And I do every once in a while just make something if I have fabric that's inspiring me and I'm, like, waiting on fabric for specific customer to come in, but I don't know. Right now it's probably like 90% custom.
Wow.
And what would you say, what is the benefit or for you? Like, why do you enjoy doing customs or why are you doing so many customs?
I think that with this type of Western wear, like people, they want a custom for like a special occasion or just for to have a reason to get something made for them. You know, definitely doesn't have to be a special occasion, but I don't know. I mean, I do think I could do well with ready to wear too, but I just don't really have the capability to make that much inventory at this time.
Mm.
It's something I'm working on, but I mean, I love my custom clients. You know, it's great working with them. So I enjoy it for now, for sure.
If you're going to go all out, man.
Yeah, definitely.
If you want a moose, if you want a moose on your yoke, get a moose on your yoke.
My golly.
Exactly.
So we were just talking about this, too, last week when we had Jen from A Shop from the Past on about investing in certain items and investing in items that you love and are quality and are going to care for years to come. So can you tell us a little more about quality when it comes to handmade items and what you're getting that you won't find in a ready-to-wear garment that you won't find off the rack?
Yeah, well, definitely the construction techniques are really important. Like a lot of my garments, I do French seams, which is just, it has a much nicer finish inside than like serged edges, you know. I do use an overlock machine on certain things because it just makes more sense, but whenever I can do a nicer finish on something, that is important to me. And fabric choice, you know, it's, I want something that is durable and looks nice and isn't flimsy or anything because that's not going to be easy to work with even or hold up over time. So, yeah, I mean, if I'm working with each person on their specific order, I don't have to worry about, like, buying in bulk and, like, buying some kind of fabric that's going to be cheaper just so I can get a good deal on it or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, but, I mean, it's really sad. A lot of fast fashion brands, you know, their workers are underpaid and the working conditions aren't great. So a lot of what people are paying for in slow fashion is just like a good working condition for a maker, you know. It's like,
wow.
And I think people are willing to, they're, as they're realizing that, they're more willing to make these investment purchases. And if it's something really special, then, yeah, they'll want to hang on to it for longer and take care of it, even if it is a little bit pricier.
Yeah.
Well, and I've recently, you know, the weather's starting to change here a little bit in the old Midwest, and so I was pulling out some sweaters, and I'm like, dude, I remember a day when I would want just, like, every sweater I could find just to, like, have it, you know, and it's, like, impulse buy after impulse buy. Versus now, like, honestly, after meeting Abby again, I've known you for 12,000 years, but, like, meeting you as you are now in your adult life and passionate and inspired about, like, people having wardrobes that are more ethical, that I'm like, wouldn't I rather have, like, three or four that I really love that I could style in, like, 20 different ways and that they're going to hold up season after season versus, like, what we were talking about on last week's episodes with, like, your plastics being in these clothes and it's, like, going into our washing machines and our oceans, and it's just, like, this whole deal that I think a lot of consumers just weren't aware of maybe up until this point.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm definitely not an expert on any of the statistics, but I saw an infographic on Instagram, which, don't quote me on this because I'm just repeating it, but I saw something that said on average a garment is worn 7 times before it's thrown out, and I was just absolutely horrified by that.
Oh my gosh.
And I mean, that's not, like, I love thrifting and I regularly wear things that I've had for like 10 years, so it really blows my mind, but I'm just always glad that there are a lot of people who are similarly horrified by that.
Yeah.
And yeah. I hope we can all work to change that because that's not good.
Yeah. No, it's so scary. And that's, again, like, as a consumer, it becomes your responsibility to just make better choices. And going back to the fair wage thing, how many hours would you say you put into a piece?
That's a good question.
You're like, in my calculator.
I mean, oftentimes more than 8 hours, you know, like maybe even 16 hours. It really depends on what kind of garment we're talking, but yeah, I mean, sometimes the shirt will take several days of work. So, you know, it's not going to be, I can't charge what H&M would charge because I have to pay my bills if it takes me several days to make something.
Right. You're not outsourcing that to somebody who's being horribly exploited for their work.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. It, like, hurts my gut.
I can see Angela spiraling right now.
So sad, man. So sad.
Especially when it comes to, it's easier to see it when we buy custom items. Like, we have a focus on, like, where we're spending our money and how we're spending our money. And so a custom item, we're willing to pay more for it because, like, it is so unique. But I think that's also something important to keep in mind when we spend our money anywhere, that, like, money talks, and it indicates what we value and where we value it and literally how much we value it.
Yeah.
And don't push your maker either to get shit done in, like, a day and a half.
They are artists.
Yeah, it's true.
The other thing, someone doing custom work does deserve to be paid accordingly for that, because Sarah, you obviously didn't just learn this overnight, and even though maybe it doesn't take as many hours, like one piece doesn't take as many hours as another piece, but you still put in years of legwork to get to this point.
Right, that's such a good point.
I love that. Oh, shit. I'm like, I'm ready to go to a rally right now. I'm fired up.
Yeah.
So I have to ask, how far are you booked out right now? If somebody were to hear this and be like, oh my gosh, I'm ready, give me that inspired suit, how far out would they need to wait?
Well, I'm booking for like January right now. So
that's not bad.
I don't know how many months away. Yeah. January, February. I mean, maybe if I really took a look at it, I should probably be saying February, but yeah. That's about what we're looking at right now.
And what's the process like if somebody wants to order a garment from you?
They could just email me at jukeboxmamadesigns@gmail.com, and we can go back and forth a little bit because everything's different, you know, what they're looking for. And I do usually have a couple of options for people in different price points. Mm-hmm. Like if someone wants a suit that they can't afford, like a fully custom suit, then I can work with them on sourcing a vintage one and embroidering that and rhinestoning it and stuff. So that's a lot less work than a fully custom suit. So it's a slightly lower price point and stuff like that. So I want to work with my customers because I get it that it's like, you know, I want it to be accessible to people while still being sustainable for me as well.
Love it. And I have to imagine you've made yourself some pretty amazing things over the years. I have to ask, what is your favorite vintage piece that you have found, and what's your favorite piece that you have created?
Those are very good questions. Let's see.
We'll give you a minute to go look.
Well, my favorite vintage piece, I would say, is it's a vintage from the 40s or 50s ranch made leather fringe shirt. Like, it's a burnt orange fabric, and then it has the cream colored cutouts and fringe. And I do work kind of inspired by that because I just love that style so much. But it's nice. It's definitely my most treasured shirt. And then let's see, my favorite one that I've made. One that I really loved, I made a couple years ago. It's like a circle skirt that has a spider web embroidered on the whole entire thing. And I made it for Halloween, but it's really fun. No, it was one of my earlier experimentations with webs, but I do a lot of webs now. So.
I was seeing that on your website, the little web bandana or stock tie. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah.
He was cute. He was really cute. Yeah. So speaking of the website, where can people find you? The website.
Yeah, I have a website. It's just jukeboxmama.com. And then, yeah, I have a shop there with not a whole lot of stuff, but there's a couple of ready-to-wear things and definitely a lot of T-shirts and accessories and stuff like that. But for custom work, you can just get in contact with me through email.
Beautiful. And you're on Instagram at the same. Jukebox Mama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On Instagram, it's jukebox.mama.
Jukebox.mama.
Mama with one M.
M-A-M-A. Yes. The Illinoisan spelling of mama.
So, everyone, if you have not checked out Siri's work yet, make sure you do that.
Yeah.
Jump on over to Instagram, jukeboxmama. The stuff is amazing, and when you see it, you will absolutely want to go to her website and reach out to her, because I think about it all the time.
Yep.
Sure do. Siri, thank you so much for being on here with us today and talking about a little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything. That's a great way to put it.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun talking to you, too.
Oh, I love it. Well, thank you all so much for tuning in and listening today as we talk to Siri from Jukebox Mama. Jukebox Mama. We will see you all next week.